come your masters of war. Here that build the big guns, here that build the death planes, here that build all the bombs, here that hide behind walls, here that hide behind discs.
I just don't want you. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Stephen Walt, who is the Robert N. René Balfour Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. He's the author of The Origins of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy. He also co-wrote, along with John Mearsheimer, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, and has an article at foreignpolicy.com, Top 10 Questions You Won't Hear at Tonight's Debate. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Walt.
Nice to be with you.
And we'll get to the top 10 questions, but basically you're saying that tonight's debate will be the most rancorous and least edifying of the three debates. Explain.
Well, I could be surprised, but I think that we're not likely to get a lot of enlightenment here, in part because there's just not a lot of difference between the two candidates on foreign policy issues. President Obama has, in fact, implemented a fairly centrist, maybe even center-right foreign policy, a rather hawkish approach to many international problems, and that doesn't leave someone like Governor Romney much room to attack him from the right. Americans from the political left might have a bit of a beef with the president, but Romney can't really go after him on very many issues without sounding like he's someone who either wants to waste a lot more money on defense or who wants to start a few more wars, and neither of those positions is likely to be very popular with the American people. So instead of substance, you're going to get a lot of posturing from both candidates, particularly, I think, from Governor Romney, and a lot of rhetoric, but not a lot of real substantive policy difference.
Well, clearly, Romney will go after Obama on Libya, which the Republicans, from the very beginning, before any information came in, have tried to turn into a political issue. And I'm surprised that the Obama White House has let it get this far. They're in a bit of a bind, though, aren't they? I mean, the extent to which Libya is in chaos then plays against their narrative of having liberated Libya. But on the other hand, maybe a little honesty about the fact that there's about 1,700 militias and no central army or police, and and that the U.S. can't send in the bombers, as the Republicans now are saying he should have done. Why not tell the truth about it rather than keep sort of defending what clearly looks like not the most competent response to a terrorist attack?
Well, I don't think actually Governor Romney can make a lot of mileage on Libya. First of all, most Americans just don't care that much about what happened in Libya. They're bothered by the death of the U.S. ambassador. But it is not, it seems to me, a vital interest for most Americans. Second, it's hard for Romney to argue that the United States should have done nothing. Does that mean he thinks we should have let Muammar Gaddafi remain in power? Third, there's not much enthusiasm in the United States for getting more directly involved in Libya. And perhaps the one thing you can point to is that there should have been better security for the embassy. But that doesn't, that's usually not the direct responsibility of the president. And finally, Romney's own response on Libya has been somewhat precipitous. And one of the points I think President Obama will try to make throughout the debate is that running foreign policy requires some mature judgment. You can't just, come up with snap ideas or snap decisions in response to the first reports you get. And that Romney throughout the campaign has tried to score gotcha points sometimes before all the facts were in. So I'm sure that Romney will bring up Libya, and I'm reasonably confident President Obama will have a pretty good response on that issue.
So do you think...
Well, we'll see.
Well, what about tying Libya into Syria in the sense that Romney, even though he's not specific, is suggesting that somehow we should be doing more to help the rebels there? But Syria will end up probably in a very similar situation as Libya is, assuming eventually Assad falls. You still have chaos, and you still have, because that is the legacy of dictatorship. They don't allow for political plurality, and in the end, you end up with extremes. That's what's happened in Libya. That's what's happened, will probably happen in Syria. And that's, to me, that's just an adult argument.
Right, but the central point that both candidates have is first of all, the interesting issue on Syria or Libya is all in the details. Exactly what do you think the United States should do, at what cost, with what forces, with what diplomatic or possibly other instruments of power you'd be willing to use. Just to say we ought to be doing more to help one side or the other begs an enormous number of questions. How do we know which opposition groups really deserve our support? How can we be sure that the weapons won't get diverted into the wrong hands, etc.? President Obama and Governor Romney, I think, both will want to stay away from specifics here. President Obama, because he can't necessarily talk about all the things the United States is already doing there. And Governor Romney, because he doesn't want to be too concrete and specific, because, again, it makes it sound like he might be a little bit too eager to get the United States embroiled in another quagmire. My guess is, again, Syria is likely to come up, but you're not going to see a lot of substantive policy disagreement.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Walt, who is the Robert and Renee Belfer Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. He's the author of The Oranges of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy. And he co-wrote, along with John Mearsheimer, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. He also has an article at foreignpolicy.com, Top 10 Questions You Won't Hear at Tonight's Debate. Well, what we will surely hear tonight's debate is more China bashing. Is that a fair bet?
I think we'll get some of that, yes, because there's lots of survey evidence suggesting that one of the most important foreign policy issues to many American voters is the idea of preserving American jobs. And China is often seen incorrectly, in my view, as the principal source of, say, high unemployment in the United States. So my guess is you'll certainly see Governor Romney talk about how he will get tough with China. And I think you'll see President Obama argue that he has both been tough where it was appropriate to be tough with China, but also has worked to manage a relationship with a very important economic partner. There you might actually see some real disagreement, but in a sense it tells us more about American domestic politics than what's right in our foreign policy. Because although Romney may talk about getting tough with China, lots of people say that when they're running for office, and then once they get into office, they discover that starting a trade war with China is the last thing they want to do, particularly when the American economy is also pretty fragile.
But Romney, in his last debate, said on day one he'd call China a global cheater, which probably will start a trade war. So he's already opened that door. But I think your point...
There's a long tradition of people saying things during the campaign and then not doing them once they're president. And I think much of the China bashing you might hear tonight falls in that category.
Well, clearly, China bashing is, I think, related to Ohio, is it not, and Wisconsin to a lesser extent, that it ties into the jobs narrative. And how do you think both candidates will pivot towards domestic issues? Because to my mind, they know what the American voters are interested in. And as it happens, this last debate is about something that the American voters aren't as interested in as domestic politics. At least that's the assumption.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. It'll be fascinating to see how they try to remind everyone of their domestic positions. My guess is that, you know, Romney will sound a little protectionist, which isn't his real position. He'll certainly sound strong about trying to bash China. And I think President Obama will come back and point out how both diplomatic and economic program has promoted international trade, which has benefited the American economy in a whole variety of ways. My guess, that's maybe the one part of the debate where you're going to see some eye-glazing, wonkish detail get thrown back and forth. But I don't think it tells you very much about what foreign policy either candidate would actually follow in office.
So, Stephen Walt, let me go to one of your questions here that in the foreign policy article, Top 10 Questions You Won't Hear at Tonight's Debate. Number two, gentlemen, Neither of you have served in the U.S. military. Governor Romney, you have 5 grown sons and none of them have ever served. President Obama, you have 2 daughters, one of whom will be eligible to enlist in 4 years. Have either of you encouraged your children to serve our nation by enlisting in the armed forces? If not, why not? That's, I think, an easier question for Obama. Nobody's going to tell a 15-year-old girl that she or what however old she is, maybe she's 14, that she should be thinking about enlisting in the army. But you have real evidence of the 5 sons, and in Romney himself, he demonstrated in favor of the Vietnam War, yet got an exemption to become a Mormon missionary.
That's right. I think, though, that both the candidates ought to be probed on the tendency for American politicians increasingly to talk about how much they love the U.S. military, how much they want the country to be strong, how much we need to support the troops, provided, of course, that their children actually never have to serve. And that's obviously the case in the case of Governor Romney and his son. But it seems to me it's worth asking President Obama if he's ever talked to his daughters about the fact that this is an option, a way that you can serve your country. You don't have to simply go off to college and go to grad school and get a law degree and then become a politician. There are other ways to serve. And has he ever raised that as an option? Did Governor Romney ever talk to one of his sons about maybe serving in the Navy or the Air Force or the Army? And given that both of them are going to try and represent themselves as strong defenders of American national security, it's worth asking whether they think those sacrifices extend to their families as well. It's worth noting, by the way, that Vice President Biden's son did serve in the military and I believe served in Iraq. But that doesn't tend to be something that most American politicians do and most American politicians' children do.
I believe there's only a handful of congressmen and senators whose sons are and daughters are in the military. But if you've spent any time in the White House, the whole place is awash with military aides. So it's unlikely that the Obama daughters aren't aware of the military.
Of course not. And I'm sure that Governor Romney's sons were aware that this was something they could do if they chose, and they chose not to for whatever reason.
So, Stephen Walt, in terms of your 10 questions here, obviously Afghanistan is one that neither candidate particularly would want to talk about. The truth of the matter is it's going to go to hell fairly soon after the elections, isn't it?
I think we actually don't know that. I don't think we're going to get a particularly desirable outcome, but things may turn out somewhat better than we might think. The point is, they're probably not going to be substantially different than they would have been had the United States not had the surge ordered in 2009 and had the United States chosen to draw down much sooner. The fact that we fought for the last 2 or 3 years has probably not altered the political equation in Afghanistan in any predictable way. And it seems to me this is one of the places that Romney could legitimately criticize President Obama, except if he did that, he'd be attacking him essentially from the left, which is something he doesn't want to do. So you end up with, in this case, 2 candidates that are basically Tweedledee and Tweedledum. They both think the United States should get out of Afghanistan. They both think we should get out at about the same time. And there's really no substantive difference between their positions there.
And number 4 of your top 10 questions you won't hear tonight's debate, Stephen Walt, is about the threat of climate change. Both candidates had ample opportunity to refer to climate change when in the last debate when they talked about energy use, and it didn't. Neither broached it. So you expected there to be a deafening silence on tonight on climate change?
One thing to understand about tonight's debate is that the topics have been already selected by the moderator, Bob Schieffer, and they've already been told to the candidates that they're going to focus on a series of issues, most of which revolve, by the way, around different aspects of the greater Middle East, including Afghanistan, Iran, Israel, Palestine, things like that. So climate change was left off not by the candidates, but by the people organizing the debate. That said, it is certainly striking that an issue that may be among the most, if not the most, important long-term issues facing the United States and the rest of the world is completely absent here. I don't expect it to come up because it's impossible to talk about climate change without basically implying that the United States is going to have to alter the way it does business in a variety of ways, and that it's going to involve some costs. And costs are not something that either candidate really wants to talk about tonight.
Well, there's a very popular feeling, and somewhat justified. You know, remember George W. Bush referred to America being addicted to oil. He didn't go on to say that the war in Iraq was a drug war. And further, the fact that we are so dependent upon this part of the world that's causing us so much grief would indicate that maybe the solution is to get off the drug. And why not bring that up?
Well, I guess they may talk a little bit about that. And, for example, they might talk about how the United States has the prospect of being energy independent through hydraulic fracking and other modern technologies that may be, you know, creating greater reserves here in the United States that we can exploit. The problem is that if you drive the price of energy down or you give the United States energy independence and we continue to consume fossil fuels at the same rate we are, that makes the climate change problem worse. Once again, I think that's just going to be an issue that both candidates try to stay away from.
So what about the red line on Iran that we saw Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel draw that cartoon at the United Nations recently? He's been somewhat silent since because the evidence that the sanctions are working in Iran are pretty manifest, with its currency dropping by 90% in a year and people demonstrating in the streets of Tehran and other cities. And even the Bazaaris now turning against the government. Don't you think Obama's got a strong argument there? Because clearly the argument that Romney's been putting forth so far of Obama throwing Israel under the bus has been working. I think that may explain what's happening in Florida with the polls changing in Romney's favor.
Yeah, I think there's actually very little difference between the two candidates on the Iran issue. They've both stated that they oppose Iran getting any kind of nuclear weapon. That they both make it clear that the military force is an option they would consider using to prevent that from happening. The problem for Romney is it's hard to take a tougher position than President Obama has already taken without making it sound like you're getting ready to go to war. And it's hard to run for president in almost any circumstances by promising the American people that you're going to get them involved in another war, let alone another Middle East war, as soon as you've moved into the Oval Office. So he can't sound too hawkish, and because President Obama's position on Iran is already pretty hawkish too, there's just not a lot of room for Romney to stake out a position that's substantially different. So he may try to you know, argue that Obama has been too naive, he's given Iran too much time, etc. But Obama can always come back and say that he prefers to let diplomacy run its course and see if there's any way we can accomplish our objectives without having to go to war, whose results might be unpredictable. That's actually going to be, I think, a tricky issue for Romney to handle without, again, sounding like he's too willing to put Americans in harm's way. And by the way, Americans in harm's way when we're not even sure at this point that Iran has a nuclear weapons program.
But just in closing, why not bring up the neocons? In one of the last, I think it was the last debate, or maybe it was Vice President Biden brought up the fact that the judiciary appointments for the Romney administration will be decided by Robert Bork. Why not mention that the neocons who brought us the disastrous Iraq war, which Iran won thanks to their stupidity, now every one of them will be in his cabinet. It'll be George W. Bush's foreign policy all over again.
Well, not every one of Romney's foreign policy advisors is a neoconservative, but there are a number of prominent neoconservatives left over from the Bush administration who are playing important roles in his sort of foreign policy brain trust. And I actually believe it would be very effective for the president to point this out, simply to say that if you had your problems with George W. Bush's foreign policy, you might have some real problems with the Romney foreign policy policy if they had that much influence. And for that matter, President Obama could ask Governor Romney point blank, given the track record of these individuals, why are you relying upon their advice? You know, I choose to take the advice of people who have been much more successful in handling foreign policy. You're relying on advice from people whose track record is really quite dismal. What does that tell us about your ability to pick advisors, ability to staff a government? I think that might be very effective, but at some level, I don't think I'm going to hear that tonight. It's a little too personal. It's sort of not President Obama's style, but we'll see.
Well, he's already lost one debate by being so passive or absent. So if he wants to win, maybe you should take your advice. I thank you for joining.
He certainly won't be passive tonight. That I'm not worried about.
Okay. Well, I thank you for joining us, Dr. Stephen Walt.
Nice talking with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Walt, who is Robert and Renee Belfer Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. He's also the author of The Origins of Alliances, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy. And he co-wrote, along with John Mearsheimer, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. And he has an article at foreignpolicy.com, Top 10 Questions You Won't Hear at Tonight's Debate. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a Democratic pollster about how much this third and final debate will affect the outcome of this election.
It's all about strikes now, so it would strike in the end.